Okay, we are continuing in the Morna Vuchim, section 1, chapter number 72. And as we said, the Rambam is now going to, as we've already showed, the difference between the Calamists versus the Greek philosophers, and the Rambam that generally is like 90% Greek philosopher style, nature and all that stuff. And not just to say, well, what we think makes sense and we can't have anything against our religion. But the Rambam says, that's not so. We have to go with science. And then where I will differ with the philosophers, we will tell you about the creation of the world. But right now, chapter 72 is how the world works scientifically. Wow. And how man is a microcosm of the universe. And again, he'll be saying some things that are not true, but is based on the latest science at the time. Okay? And remember, the whole point of Morna Devuchim is our responsibility today is to find Hashem through our modern understanding of God. Mm-hmm. And this was the most up-to-date understanding he had. So all he's going to do today, and you don't really have to understand how it all works, this it was the basic up-to-date Aristotelian science at the time of man. And this was what he totally subscribed to. And this all by observation and not speculation. Okay, so this is just the outline of the entire chapter. The world is completely unitary and must necessarily be so, emanating from the unitary God. Okay, and that's why the world will have to reflect God, because it's unitary from God. Second point is man is a microcosm of the world. And we say that even in Kabbalah, we say that.
We did that in Mishkan.
Yeah. What? And here's the parts. A, just as man has constituent parts, but still remains unitary, one human being, so the world has many parts, but it's still one whole. B, just as some parts of man's body are governed by other parts, the motion of the heart controls many other organs, so is the motion of the heavens controlling all elemental existence in our world. In other words, some things control others, just like in the human being, so too in the world. The moon can control the tides, things like that, or even the higher spheres beyond control things. Similarly, every human soul is in some way rooted in the spiritual realm of heaven. And just as a person would die if his heart stopped beating, so would the world as we know it cease to exist without the motion of the heavenly spheres which create the dynamics of the world below it. In this sense, the whole world is like a singular human being possessed of a soul and in motion. Man is thus known as a microscopic world or an olam katan. Okay, three.
One question.
Sure.
When we're talking about that it's all sort of unitary, then really the body or the soul cannot work without each other. So that should be like a unitary thing. But we sort of talk about the soul separating from the body, and it continues on always.
Yes, but while the soul is down here, it's unitary with the body.
Right.
It's unitary with the body.
We're just talking about this world.
In this world, the soul and the body work together, and the soul controls the body.
Hopefully.
And when the world gets resurrected, then they'll be back together again. But while we're, again, what do we see in this world? In this world, the soul and the body work unitarily.
Yeah.
And when the soul leaves, then the body dies. And that's what he says. Some things depend on others. Okay? Three. The world is bounded by an outer sphere closest to God, and contains a series of concentric, transparent spheres. These spheres form the orbits of the various planets and celestial bodies. The sphere closer to our physical life is the lunar sphere. Okay? There's no vacuum in the world, as we reject the theory of the atomists, but rather there is fluidity. In other words, there's always something next to something, and there's not like vast space in between the parts. Everything is connected. Okay. Four, each of the concentric spheres moves steadily without acceleration or deceleration, but each at a different speed and a different orbit. Okay, when he's talking about spheres, he's not talking about regular physical
planets,
but he's talking about metaphysical types of spheres. The fastest moving sphere, which causes motion of other planets, is the outermost sphere. Every celestial body does not move on its own, but is rather embedded in its respective sphere. It has to stay in that sphere that it's in. 5. Some features of the celestial realm are matters of theory and speculation, meaning we don't understand everything, such as we're unsure if some of the spheres exist in space without orbiting the Earth, or if all the spheres orbit the Earth in some way, either circularly or elliptically. Now, we know this for sure now is not true, right? This Aristotelian thought that everything is goes around the Earth. We don't know for sure how many spheres there are, but the number is not less than 18. Okay, now we go to the elements. In between the lunar sphere and our Earth are contained the four elements, from heaviest to lightest: earth, water, air, and fire. There is a fifth element that transcends the other four elements and is what the celestial bodies are comprised of, which we have no way of knowing what that is exactly. The lunar sphere contains beneath it a primordial form of matter, a fifth matter, which breaks down into the four forms. It's like a pre-matter stage. And these forms give rise to the four elements of matter with their respective qualities. The elements are inanimate and have no sentience, meaning they don't have any feelings per se. They are acted upon and do not act independently other than conforming to their natural properties, which are, the natural properties of earth and water are to move to lower points. They're heavy. Whereas the natural properties of air and fire are to move to higher points. Because the fifth element is placed into motion by the lunar sphere, it forces motion upon the four elements, which causes the elements to combine. In other words, these things move now, these four elements, and they can combine. They don't move by themselves. There's some force that moves them. Let's say wind makes the rain fall. And then it combines with the earth and makes mud or things like that. In other words, the water itself could not go to the earth. The fire itself could not go to plants, face, to make combustion. There has to be something that moves them. But because these compounds are temporary, they eventually break down and return to their individual elements. Ultimately, everything turns back to its original state and is in a state of motion in this respect. Just like the spheres rotate and eventually return to their original position, so does everything as well. I guess like the earth returns back to the earth, the water returns back to the water, the air to the air, and fire to the fire. The spheres, in contrast to the elements, possess souls, and as will be demonstrated later, have sentience. This might be like Malachim in the Tanakh. Okay, now we go to the next paper, not the back side.
Don't go to the back side.
Also, unlike the elements, they're constantly in motion. They're not being moved by something, but the spheres are the movers. Okay, 8. The four forces that come from heaven to this world, and which cause things to move by themselves, okay? So what do they do? That which causes the elements to combine, affecting mineral existence. So there's forces for all four. That which grants vegetable spirit to all plant life. That which grants animating spirit to all animal life. That which grants intellect to man. So there are forces that from the higher realm that create the ability for these four elements to act the way they act. Okay? Quote, nature is the term used by philosophers to denote the way the world operates and safeguards all the constituent components of the world, which making sure they operate normally. In other words, this is not a miracle from God on a daily basis, but nature is the way the system is set up and just continuously flows. This term is also used by physicians in noting the way the body maintains its constituent organs and limbs. It is speculative as to where this nature force is emanated from an intermediary sphere or from Hashem. Can add that there. Now, vital organs of the body vary very, very, very little from one person to another. For example, people's liver sizes varies only slightly from person to person. Right, Martin?
Correct.
Right? Can't be that much bigger.
No, not that bigger.
However, by contrast, certain body features and parts vary much more diversely if these parts of the body are not vital organs, but rather exist in order to serve vital organs or vital functions of the body. So, for example, hairiness and skin pigmentation vary widely from person to person.
Sure.
Okay.
Hearts.
What?
The same size, a heart?
No, some people have bigger hearts.
But not that big. Not twice as big.
No.
But yeah, somebody could be 2 feet taller than another person, couldn't they?
Or way hairier.
Yeah. Way hairier. It's a lot of different
lot
skin
blacker.
Colors.
There's some people that are a lot blacker in their skin color than white people. No, there are.
Really?
There are some that are really blacks.
Black.
Not
really
brown.
Yeah, very dark.
Black.
Yeah.
Black. Black is black, yeah. Right?
They're not important.
Okay. 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 E. Similarly, certain species are vital and will thus be reproduced in an orderly fashion, whereas other species are non-vital, such as worms, will thus spontaneously generate with less specificity and order, which we know is not true anymore.
Remember, he talked about flies.
That yeah.
Remember, I was just thinking the same thing.
Right.
The green bins.
Yeah.
The
same principle holds true for the world in general. Certain components of nature are everlasting and vital, such as the fifth element and the basic four elements. They have to be. But other compound structures are not permanently vital and therefore decompose and disappear over time. 10. Certain forces exist within the human being that are responsible for his coming into being and being maintained. Those are the same forces which cause a man to become ill and eventually die. For example, man possesses an attractive faculty. What does that mean? That causes him to ingest things. I don't know why they call it attractive. I guess to attract food in or whatever. But it's
hunger. It's what makes him eat.
Okay. So causing ingestions which nourish him and keep him healthy. Mm-hmm. But this same faculty causes him to ingest other things like chocolate bars when he comes home from the shear, which causes him sick and eventually die.
Oh, my goodness.
The same principle exists in nature. That which causes the elements to combine in a proper and healthy manner to produce beneficial phenomena also causes natural disasters as a result of an unhealthy combination of forces and elements.
Like hurricanes and tornadoes.
Man is uniquely Olam Katan because of his unique intellect. All other living creatures' natures are similar to man except for man's intellect. Man is dependent upon his rational faculty for survival, unlike other animals who can exist in the wild without intellect. But man's intellect is the key to his survival due to his more fragile physical makeup and his need to invest more effort in his shelter and nourishment. Man is also more dependent upon community to help him create provisions for himself, where each person contributes something different to the collective. Just as man's intellect sustains him, and without his intellect he would perish, so there is a quote-unquote intellect of the world, which is God, without whom the world would cease to exist. He is thus known as life force of the world. And the pasuk for that is in Daniel, Vayishava, and the angel swore, Bechei ha'olam, with the life force of the world. The analogy between God and human intellect must be clarified in that there are three important differences.
Turn over the page.
One, the human who controls his various organs and constitute parts benefits from those constituents, whereas God does not benefit in any way from the components of the world which he moves. God is the ultimate giver who gives without any expectation of reciprocation. Two, the heart, which controls and moves the other organs of the body, is protected by those organs by being in their center. Mm-hmm. Right? The more vital, the more it has to be protected. For God, it's just the opposite, in that he surrounds the organs of the world, meaning Hashem is the ultimate protector. Okay? Mm-hmm. But the similarity between the two is also that the closer the constituent organ is to the heart, the more vital it is, like lungs, liver, and diaphragm. They're more vital and they're closer to the main thing. Similarly, the further away the component of the world is from God, who surrounds the uttermost sphere, the less similar to God that component is. True. Three, human intellect cannot exist without a human body, but God can and does exist independently of his world. 13, I could have analogized more accurately by distinguishing between the rational faculty within man and the acquired intellect of man, but he's not going to, because man's innate rational faculty is more like the innate intellects of the celestial bodies, whereas man's acquired intellect is separate from the innate human and thus more analogous to God.
So that's like Torah? Is Torah the
Yeah. However, both the topics of acquired intellect and celestial intellects are speculative and require more detailed research, and that is why I have simplified my discussion to discuss human intellect in general. So he doesn't get into this innate...
Is that Tali Dada or the Rambam? Who says that?
This is all the Rambam. This is all just notes. I present these ideas to you as they are absolutely clear and proven. This is from Greek textbooks and some of the even Muslim textbooks. This is textbook Torah. If you wish, go and prove them to yourself by studying them using soliloquisms and proofs, but you wish to accept it from me, that's what Eov says. Hine zos ha-karnua, can he see how I've investigated it's true. Shmoen avata da'aloch, you listen and you will know it. This is the pure science. Next, tomorrow, then the fun begins. It's going to be at least three parts. The 12 main shitas of the Calamists is coming tomorrow. And how he has to refute a lot of those shitas. Because that was the accepted religious...
This one here?
No, I haven't given it out yet. It's right over here.
Because you have this here.
No, that's we're not doing that.
Okay.
So everything can go. And this is going to be tomorrow's. And then we're going to work our brains a little bit tomorrow. Today was easy. Baruch Hashem.